9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. The time is 1 p.m. on Sunday, the 19th of September, and you're tuned in to the Sunday Lunch Show with me, Khalil Rouse, on Teachers Talk Radio. In today's show, I'll be joined by Miss Mika to discuss how to make schools more representative of diversity. Later on, I'll be joined by Jules to dive into the role of the designated safeguarding lead, what it entails, and tips. As always, tune in and talk it out. And I am live.
Live from London. This is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Good afternoon, everyone, on this dreary, and I don't know where you guys are, but it is a dreary, grim day. Every time I come into onto Teacher Talk Radio, I look out my window, and right now it's very overcast and it's looking fairly cold. Gone are the days of sun. Maybe it's coming back, who knows? But for now it looks grim. Let me know if anyone's got any sun in the UK. Because as far as I'm concerned, where I am in the south of England, well, the London area, it's grim. It's grim, but it's Sunday, and it means, hi, Miss Mika, you have joined the right link. You are in the right place. It is Khalil Rouse. It's the sun. Have I joined the right link? Ah, yes, you are here. It's all good. This is a Sunday Lunch Show with me, Khalil Rouse, on Teachers Talk Radio. As I said in the intro, I've got some guests. Oh, my word. Let me get some sound effect for myself. 1 second. Let me get some sound effects for myself. Oh, I forgot they go on for a little while. Give it a second. and there's no way to stop it. Right, I'd say that. Do you know what? I put on like I'm some loser. I get guests. Listen, I get guests. It sounds like what I used to say when I was like 13, being like, I get girls, you know. But anyways, I get guests, but not all the time. Depending on how the week goes, how much kind of what's it called? What's it called on Twitter when you start to get networking, there we go. Wow, completely forgot my vocabulary. Depends how much I've been networking and social media and everything else, but I've been on my grind over the last couple of weeks, getting myself 2 guests on 1 day. Crazy. But yeah, so as I said in the intro, so I've got 2 guests, and today we've got 2 kind of different topics of the day. We'll be talking about diversity and inclusion. I've got my own opinions. I've got my opinion on the word inclusion to start with, but we'll get to that later on. And also, I can't wait for this one because I don't know if they've had a show on Teachers Talk Radio speaking about DSLs or designated safeguarding leads. I'm going to tell myself that they haven't, and this is an exclusive. That's what I'm hoping it is, but Tom Rogers, let me know if we've had anything about DSLs before, like specific designated safeguarding lead specific shows, because I can't wait, because that's my role in school and I just want to talk about it because I don't get to talk about that often, because it's one of those very, I feel like it's a very isolated role in school, in terms of people know what you do, but they don't really know what you do, if that makes sense, and they can't know the full ins and outs because that's part of the role. But yeah, so I hope everyone's Sunday has been great. I hope you've had a good working week. Let me know of any highlights you've had this week, anything that amused you this week, any highlights, any good lessons. Hopefully all your lessons were good, but anything that stood out, please let me know in the chat. As always, it's a live talk show, which means you can call in at any time by just pressing that gray phone icon at the bottom. I've got my 2 guests in the studio. I'll be bringing them on in a few minutes, just waiting for the room to fill up as always. But yeah, so I was listening. If you just tune in to me, welcome everyone that's come into the studio. Miss Kato Stem says, I don't know what that's in response to. I'm assuming that's some highlights, I think. Let me know about your highlights, Miss Kato Stem. What was I going to say? I was listening to Graham Colum's show earlier today, and I listened to Sobia's show as well. So if you haven't listened to those shows, go back onto ttradio.org/listen-back, and you can hear their shows, my shows, everyone's shows, through Spotify and other podcasting platforms. I was listening to Graham's show, and he was talking about like horror stories from school trips. And it just, I was contributing quite a lot to that because my biggest horror story. It's not even a horror story. It's just quite, it's embarrassing. It's quite embarrassing. So in a nutshell, we had a school trip. We're on a skiing school trip. First things first, those are the best school trips, hands down, in my opinion, because you get to ski for free. And I think that's just incredible. The fact you can just go skiing in France or Italy for free is just a massive perk of the job, which you don't talk about enough. But yeah, that's one of the perks of the teaching world, that you get to go on big old trips like that for free. Anyway, so I went on a ski trip, and the long story short is I got lost in the mountains. That's long story short. There is more to it, of course, but I got lost. Like, not even me with kids. Like, that would be even worse. But just me by myself, I got lost because situation is, I'll tell a mini story. So what happened was we were skiing, obvs, and then it was time to go. We had to always head back to base, obviously, again. So you had to head back to base, and I'm a proficient skier. I'm not exceptionally good. I'm also not bad. I can stay up. I can ski competently. So then we had two members of staff that were always with each group along with the instructor. One member of staff took the group down. And I was like, do you know what? You go take the group down. What, you can wait for everyone to congregate. I'm going to take a little scenic group. I checked my phone, looked at the map and said, yeah, I'm going to go this way. Boy. So I went off and I went skiing a different route. And I had the plan. The best laid plan was there. It was all good. It was fine until it got to a point when I thought it was going a bit far out. I was going a bit wayward, and I didn't recognize anywhere. And there was no one else on the slope. Like, there was no one else on the slopes at all. It was just me and snow and trees. And I was like, I kept going, and there was no other way. I could, in the distance, I could see base, and I was just going further and further away from it with no way back that I could discern. So it was a problem. And I just thought, if anything happened to me, like, I had my phone, but really and truly, if anything happened to me, it was curtains. So by the end, I ended up in the next town over. I was scared. I was honestly scared. Like, I had to firm it when I got back to the coach. Because the kids were like, oh, sir, did you get lost? I was like, no. Lost who? I just took this different route. I knew what I was doing. But no, if I tell you, I was scared. I could have died. Like, if anything happened to me, if I lost a ski or something, then it would have been the end for Mr. Rouse on the slopes. It would have been a sad way to go. But I made it. But that was definitely one of the worst experiences. Because, like I said, I'm not a great skier. So just being out in the mountains, no one else was. When I tell you no one else was there, no one was there. Just me. Just me. Oh, man. Just reliving it is giving me shudders because I was genuinely shook. I was worried. I was fearful because I could have fallen off the mountain. Like, I'm not that good. If an avalanche came, then what? Anyways, that was me on the slopes. That was a few years back. I haven't been on a ski trip since, but I can't wait to go back on the trips. Mr. Graham Collum Show was making me really reminisce about school trips and everything else. Miss Kato Stem, in other news, has said the highlight is that she said, I taught some of my year 12 students when they're in year 10. And I've been so impressed with how much they've matured since then. They went from being on the fence about science to loving it whilst I was teaching them in year 10. And now they've chosen chemistry A-level. Love inspiration. Inspiring kids to change their kind of opinion on a subject is a massive, massive highlight. Okay, let me run the intro one more time. And then Miss Mika, give me about a minute or so. You can call in and we'll get into talking about diversity and inclusion in schools. But as you know, I like to run the intro one more time now that the room is a little bit more full.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio.
Afternoon again. It is now 1:09 on Sunday, the 19th of September, and you're still tuned in to the Sunday Lunch Show with me, Khalil Rouse, on Teachers Talk Radio. In today's show, I'm about to be joined by Miss Mika to discuss how to make schools more representative of diversity. Later on, I'll be joined by Jules to dive into the role of the designated safeguard in need and provide tips for anyone that's starting out. Let's go!
Live from London. This is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Right, let's get to it. Miss Mika, whenever you're ready, please do call in. I've just seen the Teacher Talk Radio tweet saying I've got the smooth sounds. I've been described as smooth, but I like it. I want to, that's like Barry White kind of smooth. That's why when I hear smooth, I think of Barry White. Or Morgan Freeman. He's smooth as well. I wish I imagine just waking up and being able to speak like Morgan Freeman. That'd be crazy. Anyways, but yeah, Miss Mika, when you're ready, press that phone button and call in when you can. It says you've called in. Not on my screen, it doesn't. Oh, there we go. There we go. I see it now. I always find it funny when guests get really nervous on their first entrance. Hello, Miss Mika.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, very well. Loud and clear. I'm assuming you can hear me as well.
I can too. Thank you so much for having me on today.
No worries at all. You pressed the phone and had a bit of a delay, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Listen, technology, who knows? Like, it's the best and the worst, gift and a curse, technology. We become so reliant on it that the moment we get a little hiccup, the whole world implodes. So it becomes a bit of a treacherous one. Thank you for joining me on this Sunday. How's your day been so far?
It's good, thank you. It's a bit wet and miserable, but you know, I'm indoors, so I can't complain too much.
Indeed. Where are you based? Whereabouts are you from?
Northwest London.
Ah, North Wheezy. Okay, yeah. Northwest yeah. London. Well, I would say it's definitely not my stomping ground, but a lot of my friends were born and raised in Northwest London. And my partner was born and raised in Northwest London as well. So it's a place, and I got my family in Northwest London as well. So it's a place very close to my heart, Northwest London. But yeah, so Miss Mika, can you just give a quick intro to our listeners that just explains what your kind of connection is to the education world, maybe how long you've been connected to the education world. Then yeah, just give a quick kind of intro to our lovely listeners, please.
Of course. So I'm a teacher of English. I've been teaching for 9 years now, and I teach in Northwest London. I'm a lead teacher as well, and I suppose the reason that I'm on this show today is because I want to do something about making my school a more inclusive place. I want to do something about really, really celebrating that representation, that diversity that we have of our kids, our staff, and, you know, just boosting and recognizing and seeing people for every single side of them, if that makes sense.
Mm. No, definitely. There's been I feel like there's been, over the last few years, as so it should be, a massive, massive, massive push. I think people in the teaching world have woken up to the fact. I feel like people always knew this, but there's a lot more platforms that have been a lot more companies, platforms, social media accounts, loads of things that are just targeting and raising awareness about the fact that the curriculum needs diversifying. It's something that we've definitely known. When you're a kind of ethnic minority in the UK, you become mm-hmm. very aware of it as you go through the schooling system. And also when you reflect on it, I feel like when I was in school myself, I don't know how you feel, when I was a student, I don't think I was that kind of like, I can't remember if I was aware of the fact that the curriculum didn't really, actually no, that's a lie, I think I definitely was. But yeah, I think I was half aware of the curriculum not really representing me at all, but I just kind of got on with it. And I just kind of I just kind of went through the motions and did well at school and moved on. What was it like for you growing up?
I think for me, well, I grew up in like the most Indian area of London, I'm sure of it. So I was never a minority. I was always a majority at that school. But like, I will never forget one of my humanities lessons, where we were talking about India. So I was like, great, yeah, this is me. This is something that's close to me. This is my identity. It's my roots, something to be proud of. And like the thing that I walked away from there was, oh yeah, we're good at cricket. Well, the British gave you that. So I think, yeah, it needs shaking up. It's needed shaking up for a long, long time.
Yeah, Sobia, one of our fellow hosts, was saying that she wasn't aware and her school was very diverse. And I'm kind of jealous. My school was very diverse, actually, but it was mainly, my school was mainly kind of, we had a lot of Asians, we had a lot of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, but then obviously we were still majority white, and then there was a handful of black kids, and then a mix of everything in the middle, but it was fair, majority still kind of white and Asian was my school, just based on, but yeah, like I said, the curriculum itself, the staff, from what I remember, the staff and the teachers were not that diverse at all, and the curriculum, I don't recall being very diverse, but at the same time, like I'm saying, I didn't really think about it that much at the time. It's only when I became a teacher and thought back to my experiences about how represented I felt in what I was learning that I became more and more aware of the kind of gaps that we're that a lot of teachers are now kind of pushing to fill at the moment. Because the whole reason this came about is because I was doing, like I messaged you on Twitter, I was doing some searching, just seeing what people are talking about, because I usually get a lot of inspiration from Twitter. And you tweeted, I'm going to kind of read it, you said, "Help please, Edu Twitter." I love when people call for help from Edu Twitter, it's great. help please, Edu Twitter. "I want to make my school more inclusive. You don't feel like black and minority ethnics and LGBTQ kind of, let me add the plus in there, staff and students feel seen enough. I'm trying to address this, but I really don't know what the solution is other than acknowledging special events. What can I do?" Then you also kind of mentioned Diverse Ed 2020. So this is where it came from, because it was a really, it struck a chord with me, and I was thinking, you know what, let's try and discuss what schools can do. And I'd be very interested, everyone that's listening at the moment, if you work in a school that you feel has made a lot of kind of noticeable strides over the last few years or however long, to make sure there is representation for, in, it could be ethnic minorities, it could be ethnic majorities in the school, but kind of UK minorities, if you want to call it that. Also LGBTQ plus staff and students. If you work in a school that's made strides, be very interested to know what you guys have done, just to share ideas and everything else. But yeah, so Ms. Mika, I know you sent the tweet out, you got a lot of responses. Have you kind of managed, have anything taken your fancy so far?
Yeah, quite a few things actually. First of all, can I just say you absolutely nailed my voice there. And when you were reading out that tweet. and yeah, do you know what? So many people came in and so many people gave me like such useful bits of advice. The problem with it is that I don't know what it looks like. And yeah, there's loads of different things that you can do to try and include more people. But this is where I'm really struggling at the minute. So, you know, I mentioned things like celebrating special events. So I thought, right, let's see what we can do about this. Let's try and, you know, take a nod to everyone, because like I'm Indian, I'm Hindu, and Diwali is like the biggest day of the year for me. It's the day that I'm so excited about. It's the day that I prep for ages for. Like, you know, you look in the year, when's Diwali this year? And it never gets nodded to. It never gets acknowledged. It never gets, okay, this is a really big deal to you. And I know it is to a lot of my students as well. And it doesn't get acknowledged. So it could be quite easy to turn around and say, okay, well, let's acknowledge Diwali, and let's acknowledge the Eid and all of the major religious celebrations or cultural celebrations, even if they're not religious. But this is a problem. So I downloaded a cultural calendar, and there's like 50 million things on there, like even just for Hinduism, that I've never even heard of before. It means no difference to me. It makes no difference to my lifestyle or to me as a person, to me as an Indian, to me as a Hindu. So if I kind of went down that cultural calendar and kind of happy whatever event it is today, or happy something else, or happy whatever to all the Hindus, it kind of loses its meaning. So for me, it's a case of, okay, well, do we do everything to make sure that everyone is included just in case they do celebrate it? Do I decide? Who decides which ones you're going to nod to and which ones you're going to ignore? And there's like a real fine balance, I think, with diversity, to not just do it to be seen, to take a nod to do it, to do it because it's really meaningful and because it comes from a really, like a really nice and inclusive place. Does that make sense?
It does. It's a difficult balance. A lot of people feel like they always use the kind of words of tokenistic sometimes, don't they? I feel like you could never really win in some situations, because people say, right, well, we want to be more diverse and more representative, more reflective of the wider world, and the fact that the world is a lot bigger than just kind of British experience. When I say British, I mean like kind of English experience or whatever else. But then at the same time, when you do an event for Eid, an event for Diwali, an event for Black History Month, an event for LGBTQ plus month, and so on and so forth, you do get people that make it, that feel or respond by saying, oh, it seems tokenistic and you're only doing it because it's Black History Month. Where is everything else in the rest of the year and everything else? So I think it is a difficult balance to strike, and I don't have the answers. We're interested to know if anyone does have the answers. I feel like my thing on all of this, if I'm honest, I personally, and I said it in my intro, I personally don't like the word inclusion. Going to be honest with you, I've never liked the word inclusion. Reason being, inclusion means that for me, that means currently there's exclusion, and I don't want to feel like, oh, we need to make you guys feel included, because that therefore implies at the moment you are excluded. Excluded from what? Because at the moment, what I feel like schools need to do is just normalize variety. That's what I think we need to do. Like, we need to just make it in all aspects of, and it has to be a conscious decision, because the curricula that's been passed down from school to school and generation to generation has not normalized variety. It's just, it's not done at all. So that's where I want to focus. And I think obviously doing the event for Diwali and recognizing Diwali and Eden, celebrating those things, wonderful. But for me, you need the schools for whom diversity, and I'm going to keep using inclusion because people do use it, but diversity and normalization of variety is what I want to call it. It needs to be ingrained, and needs to be a conscious decision to say, let's strip things back and make sure we ingrain it in everything that we teach these kids. From like going back and looking through every kind of problem you have in, I don't know, maths exam curriculum or your science curriculum or whatever, make a conscious decision to make sure we include either discoveries or people that do not just look white and male or white and female, for example.
There's such a problem with that. Like, so I'm an English teacher, so it's really, really easy for me to say, all right, great, let's get other authors, let's get other people from, you know, the LGBT community, or women, or people of colour, which is a term in itself, which, you know, is
yeah. Yeah.
But the problem is, that, you know, you have this mainstream, it's always going to be mainstream. And are we picking this story because it's good, or are we picking this story, i.e., again, back to tokenism? It's just, like, I don't want to have to go, and this is like me being really idealistic, and I'm sorry if I sound like I'm just being really negative about that whole thing. I don't want to go have to looking for an excellent piece of writing that happens to be by a woman of colour, because I have to look for it. It should be there. Why isn't it there with all the dead white men we have to study? And it's not on our main curriculum. It's like, if it's ever there, it's only like a slight blip to it. It's only like a slight kind of shoehorned in. So that's a problem in itself, that it's not out there. But I suppose that's not really helpful. That's just me critiquing society.
Well, that's the thing. That's what it is, isn't it? It's never been the priority. The people who create the curriculum, or have created the curriculum, like historically speaking, I keep trying to use the word include. I hate that word. But either way, diversity of subject and curricula has never been their priority. Like, that's not, they haven't, I don't get the impression that they've sat down when they've been creating their curriculums years and years and decades ago, being like, right, let's make sure we devise a curriculum that represents the wider society. They've not done that. So now it's been passed down and passed down and passed down. So I get that you don't want to have to actively look for things to include from people who aren't white males or aren't white females or whatever else. But what other choice have we got? Without actively doing so, what other choice have we got?
No, we absolutely don't. And like, you know, like I said, I'm lucky enough that I can do it. You know, my curriculum's full of all the Maya Angelous and the Adichies, wherever I can get a bit of Zephaniah in there. But it's up to the individual as well. And unless it goes down from your head of department, unless it goes down for like people upstairs, it's got to be a priority of everyone, not just the one teacher who thinks it's important, or the one teacher that happens to be from an ethnic minority as well.
I don't have solutions. A lot of ideas. If we go through the kind of things that people the responses, I'm going through your kind of tweet at the moment. And again, I'll ask the room if you've got is there a solution? If there are solutions, put them into the chat. What have you worked in a school that has actually made a lasting effort when it comes to normalizing variety? And I think that I'm just going to keep saying that, because I personally hate inclusion. I hate the word. But yeah, normalizing variety, but normalizing diversity, rather than including it, just normalizing it. And that could be from ethnic diversity, that could just be in kind of disabilities as well as of course different sexualities. All those things just need to be normalized,
and
because they exist
as well.
That too, and that's that, I guess that's one of those terms that I've always seen, and I've kind of looked into a little bit, and I still don't really know what it means. Well, I know what it means. I mean, well, my understanding is people who think, whose brains work in a way that's different to the norm, I'm going to say, with a quiet inflection. Correct me if I'm wrong, please.
what I know of it. But I'm in the same situation as you. I don't know anywhere near enough about it to even, you know, make a comment. But it's something that gets so easily forgotten. And that's what you're talking about, really, isn't it? Normalizing the variety.
Yes, yeah, so I'm just reading. Someone's responded saying, are the texts you study diverse? What about the rest of the curriculum? Do all displays feature diversity? What about the library? Undertake a needs audit of the school and match this with the stock. Every topic display should be inclusive and considered from a diverse viewpoint, was someone's kind of response. And then someone else is saying, others will give you a direct link, etc., but as an LGBT teacher, I would hazard a guess that someone who's able to make a statement like this is likely to have staff that feel seen. To want to do more demonstrates an L someone those in charge can look up to. You responded that you just don't feel like you're high enough up the chain to be able to make. No. Yeah. But have you been able to raise it with people above you?
Yes, absolutely. So we've got, thanks to this tweet and thanks to, like, you know, all the people that helped us, we've got a list of things that we're going to do. We're going to get a staff group together about, you know, because it can't just come from me. I can't represent everything. So other people are going to have a chance to kind of put their two pence in there. I think...
Mika, can you come close? Miss Mika, can you come closer to the microphone? You've been... Yeah.
Sorry, I wandered across my house to a bed. Reception.
There we go. That's better. That's better.
Flags out there represent, like, you know, celebrate the fact that there are people in our school, staff and students who come from all, like, every single corner of the world, all the places in the world. I want to celebrate things in assemblies. I want to celebrate Eid and Black History Month in a big way. And the other things that people aren't even aware of, like, you know, carnival, like Windrush. Does anyone even, like, do our kids even know enough about Windrush? And that's such an important thing for them to realise. We talk about British history, that's a big part of it. I've got a list here, so you tell me if I'm going on a little bit. Lunches. We said have a Christmas lunch.
Again, can you come close? Could you come close to the mic if possible? Or are you right next to me?
Can I hear me? Is that any better?
You're clearer now, yeah, go on.
Okay. So celebrating lunches, Eid lunches, Diwali lunches, things like that. And one thing that I really want to talk about is, and I think a lot of this kind of kicked off around the football. When there's a big England playing football, it's huge. It's everywhere. What about cricket? What about rugby? And can we please, please talk about women's football somewhere as well? Like, these are the things that a lot of our kids do care about, a lot of our staff cares about. And I think really trying to bring that to the forefront. Like, a few years ago when India won the cricket, there was a parade where I lived. Like, there was Indian flags up everywhere, but you go to school and it's like nothing ever happened. So, yeah, it's just looking at things that are important to everyone.
No, definitely. So Leon's in the... I think Leon's one of the guys I interact with quite a lot on Twitter. So he's put... Careful, the mic you're using, Miss Mika, is very sensitive. So every time you rustle, I can hear the movements, but just... best. I can. No, it's all right. It's all right. It's not a problem. No, it's not a problem at all. So either way, yeah. So Leon said, the issue for me, so Leon's he's a black man. He said, the issue for me as a black person is the rush to be inclusive and just talking about the same couple of people from the African continent and the USA. He says, we need to step back and actually include the inclusiveness. He's putting in kind of inverted commas in the curriculum. Otherwise, you're still othering the non-white experience. So making it feel like a kind of a side note, essentially, just let's just discuss this one person from the black community, just so we can tick that box, is what he's saying. Yeah. I imagine it needs to be done from, and he, obviously he's speaking about the black experience. He needs to be done from a black British perspective. He says, I'm not a representation for representing sake kind of person, but meaningful and impactful additions to the curriculum that don't feel forced. And it is that's the thing. It needs to be a stripped back thing. But the problem is, it can't, for that to happen, does have to come from often from people further up than us ourselves. But yeah. I think teachers, especially in Key Stage 3, and people, correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, especially in a lot of subjects in Key Stage 3, like the histories and the geographies and those kind of more global subjects, in Key Stage 3, you've got more ownership over what you can cover. And I believe maybe the same in English and those kind of subjects. It's not until you get to like GCSE age where you're limited by the actual course curriculum and what's going to be on, inverted commas, the exam and blah, blah, blah. But in Key Stage 3, if it really matters to your school, surely you have the ability, and I think you do, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in all those subs, you can teach not what you want, but you've got more ownership over the curriculum you kind of deliver to the kids. And if representation is important to you, then you have the power to do so at Key Stage 3. And then that's the kind of age where if you come into school in year 7, 8, and 9, you have a really rich experience where you're learning about the history of people that aren't white or represent you in a really organic way, and not a kind of side note way, a really organic way about things that from way back in history before, but like we're talking in like the, I don't know, I'm just going to name a century, like, I don't know, 10th century, I'm just going to name a random century. But those kind of times in history, I think that's a more rich education experience than just doing the kind of what Leon's saying, the kind of the same couple of people from the African continent, USA, like we all know about. I'd rather learn about stuff that's, rather learn about new history and proper history, not the kind of early 20th century history that everyone always kind of has overused and overworked. But yeah, he's saying that it just needs to be, but that's my argument is Key Stage 3 is the time to do it, because I feel like you have the you have the space to do it there, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I think it's what I was saying earlier on about the whole perspective thing as well. Like I learned about India, but I did not learn it from an Indian perspective. I learned it from a very British colonial perspective, and that's what I'll always remember from it. So I think the perspective thing is really important.
No, definitely. Yeah, Leon's put a little caveat. You don't have to put the caveat, Leon. We understood, but he said that he gets that obviously diverse inclusion is more than just black people, and I get that. Of course it is.
Yeah,
but he's just speaking about his own. It's a personal experience, isn't it? And Mal, one of our fellow hosts, wonderful fellow hosts, she's saying that history has been limited in the few decades due to less and less time on the curriculum. Exactly, it has been. There is less and less time. We're trying to, there isn't enough time. There isn't enough time at all. But I just think if it matters to people higher up in school, then they'll make the time for it. And I think what we're slowly getting now is a lot of schools, from my own experience and speaking to people, is the senior leadership teams are becoming either more diverse just in their kind of how they actually are, or just more aware of making sure their curriculum is diverse. We are making strides. That's my experience from obviously London. I know you could go out but beyond London into different areas and probably get a different experience. But I'm glad that a lot of schools are becoming more aware. But it's just, you've got to strip it all back. You can't just add in, we're just gonna add in a little assembly here and a little assembly there.
Yeah.
It's going back to the questions you ask the kids, the examples of when you do, for example, I know there's a lot of drive now in relationships, sex, health education, for example. There's been a recent push in the last couple of years to make sure that it's normalizing the kind of the less, I don't know how to even describe it, but households that aren't just heterosexual, for example, normalizing the fact that there are households out there with two partners who are of the same sex, for example. And it's people are now making conscious decisions to make sure that when you're talking about relationship, sex, health education, that you're not just talking about men having relationships with women. And I can't believe it's taken till like 2019, 2018 kind of time for people to think, oh, maybe it's a good idea to normalize different sexualities, like, and transgender and everything. It's crazy that it's taken.
It's been legal.
Go on. Do you know the answer to that question?
Yeah. So it's been part of our community. It's been part of our actual legal history for so long. And only now we're beginning to do it.
It's crazy. But the LGBTQ plus the movement there to just to normalize it. I'm not going to use include, just to normalize it in a world that we've got where everything's so diverse, but our curriculum often, the ones we're passed down, doesn't reflect it. It's a massive shame. Right, we've got a couple more minutes. If you've got anything, I'm just going to scroll through some of the tweets because, again, who was this? Someone's talking about using displays as being a powerful way to show contributions to subjects like maths and English and the sciences from people who represent the globe, essentially, making sure we have displays that are reflective of the world and reflective of the diverse history the world has got, not just having displays of mathematicians that are yeah, they all look one type of race or one type of ethnicity. I think that's quite a powerful way as well. So kids just see it. And again, it's normalized that people from every single ethnicity, or not every single, but a lot of different ethnicities have made valuable contributions to the world of academia in this subject, in that subject, in that subject. I think that's quite powerful as well.
And I think it all comes down to as well, like what everyone's saying about it just not being a token, it's not being a tick box activity. And like what's really important to me is just kind of getting that culture of celebration and things like displays where you can see that, okay, well, you know, you've actually, like, look at Hidden Figures as a film. There's so many people behind the scenes that you had no idea look like you or look like your friends, your peers around you, and they're doing great things in the worlds of science and maths. And even like, just a little thing like making a big deal about telling kids, am I pronouncing your name correctly? Make sure, tell me if it's being mispronounced. Like things like that are such an important part of the everyday culture, and it should be every day, not just when it's Black History Month.
Yeah, no, I've been proud to say that our school this year, especially, well, in the past few years, all our staff have been staying the same, like, few lines about when it comes to name pronunciations, everything else, which has been powerful. And I saw there was a big thing on Twitter about it over the summer, I believe, when we were coming back to everyone was doing the build up to restarting in September, making sure you make a point of saying, listen, correct me if I make a mistake on your name. Because I've been saying to kids this year, I'm like, you deserve to have your name pronounced correctly. So let me know.
Yep.
You deserve to have your name pronounced correctly. So if you're not saying that to your kids, obviously you don't say it every day, but I think that's good. It's your name. Like, don't shorten it. Shorten it, because if I can't pronounce it yet, bear with me. Yep. Keep correcting me. If I make a mistake, correct me. And I say this, there was a year seven boy that's corrected me about four times so far. And I just keep apologizing. I just keep making a mistake. Yep. But I said, keep doing it. I said, don't worry about it.
Yep.
Keep correcting me, because I'll get there.
I'll tell you the exact same thing. It's not rude. Tell me every single time. And I'm terrible for it as well. But, you know, I get myself all confused with the different pronunciations. You've got so many kids that you see. And I tell them, tell me every single time. I will not take it rudely. It is your name. It belongs to you. And this is coming from someone whose name has been mispronounced my entire life. So I can certainly sympathize.
Did you correct them when you were at school? Hello?
You know what? I think it's taken me a long time to... I'll correct them the first few times, but it's been it's taken me like until the last couple of years to be like, no, that is not my name. And really, really insist upon it. In fact, there are still people that I work with right now that still do not say my name right. But, you know, we'll get there eventually.
Do you know what's worse than that? Well, not even worse, just similar level of annoyance is when they reply to your email and they misspell your name in the reply. And not even like and they just spell it differently. And I'm like, I just sent you an email with my name at the bottom. Why are you replying and misspelling my name? But the thing is, and sometimes I think it's a genuine typo, but then the other thing is, if it really mattered to you to make sure you spelled my name correctly, you would check it, just like you would kind of proofread your email, you would double check it. Because I know that I've had people misspell my name, I consciously double check that I've spelled someone's name correctly by obviously looking at their email address or their signature and be like, right, yep, spell it correctly. But if it doesn't matter to you, then people don't do that. Like, if it's, do you know what I mean? If you've never had people mispronounce your name, then you're just not gonna do it. Go on.
I can do you one better. So my name is Bamika. Do you know how many emails I get for the girl called Barty? We are not the same person. Stop sending me Barty's emails. Or my name is not Barty. It's not even the mispronunciation or the misspelling. I'm a whole new person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that is definitely worse.
That is definitely.
Oh, my word. Yeah. You pulled them up for every single time, I'm hoping.
Yeah, of course I did.
Of course. That's what do you know what you have? They definitely got to. Miss Kato Stemmer said, I make such a big deal about pronouncing kids' names correctly. And then, yeah, she said, write it down phonetically on the paper version of the seating plan. Definitely. I've done those phonetic. You've got to write it down phonetically. And then, yeah, Jules agrees. And then Sobia saying, I think it's a societal issue. We see it in films all the time. White teacher comes in to save minority kids. I've never treated any child differently as they're all children to me. I don't understand why people come into the profession if they are prejudiced. Yeah, listen, they're prejudiced. Everyone's got their prejudices, I agree. But teaching is one. I don't know. It's hard to. It's one of those things. I think even for teaching. Say again.
Sometimes, like, that whole thing is well-meaning as well, which makes it even more difficult. Like, yes, you're trying to do a good thing, but it's so patronizing. We don't need saving. They don't need that whole white savior complex, that whole white savior motion.
No, I agree. I agree on it. Right, Miss Mika, I'm going to have, unfortunately, we've kind of reached the end of our time on this. I know it may be, this is one of those topics that you could easily bring up again later on. And it's something that I want to get my teeth back into, do a bit more research, see what's out there, see what schools are doing actively. And then maybe we'll have another show in a few weeks or months or so, and actually see if we can get some kind of just examples from, because I did send a tweet out to see what other schools are doing, and it got absolutely aired on Twitter, which happens sometimes, no problem. So it got absolutely aired. It does indeed. Hold on, Jules is calling in. 1 second. So it got absolutely aired on Twitter, and then I was like, it's a shame. Maybe I didn't give it much time. But what we're going to do, well, I think Jules has, go on, say again.
I'm just going to say, thank you so much for having me. It's been such an interesting chat.
No worries at all. Listen, like I said, I'd love to bring you on again later on, at a different date later on, so we can actually get teeth into, I'll see if I can get more response on Twitter next time to see what schools are doing. Or what schools have done in the past have proved very successful. What we're going to have to do... hold on. Jules has responded saying, yeah. Listen, Jules has dropped the unconscious bias bomb. If we start getting into that, we're going to... I could talk about all this stuff for days. I've deliberately not spoken about kind of race and stuff on my show up to this date, because I feel like I'd go off on every kind of tangent that exists. And then also Mal said, that's part of the reason why I love the film Queen of Kate. There is no white savior. I don't know what that film is, Mal. I'm going to admit ignorance there. I've got no idea. Mika, do you know that film?
No, I haven't seen it. To be honest.
Neither have I. Is it now Queen of Katwe? I don't know what's going on. Mal, let me know what's going on. Either way, right, okay, got it. It was a typo. See, you see the typo? So it said, no, you can't, your phone has said, no, you couldn't have meant Katwe, you must have meant Kate. That's what your phone told you just now.
That's right there. Your phone's even doing it.
It means you must have meant Kate, Mal. You must have meant Kate, said your phone. Crazy. Right, either way, I'm going to disconnect you now. Leon's seen the film. I'm going to have to look into this film. I'm going to have to disconnect you, Ms. Mika, and we're going to hear from the news and our sponsors. And on the other side of the news and our sponsors, I'll be joined by Jules, and we'll be talking about designated safeguard in Leeds and what our role entails and the ins and outs of what is a very difficult role in school. But Ms. Mika, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Have a wonderful Sunday.
Thank you.
This
you too.
This is Teachers Talk Radio. And this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
Following the recent reshuffle, an opinion piece on the Sutton Trust website explores the lack of socioeconomic diversity amongst the new cabinet. The piece highlights the fact that whilst Boris Johnson's cabinet have a record number of ministers from ethnic minority backgrounds, they still remain unrepresentative of the country in other ways. The piece highlights that 60% of the new cabinet attended an independent school, whilst only about 7% of the general population attend one. Just under half of the cabinet attended either Oxford or Cambridge, giving the new cabinet a very similar set of educational experiences. The piece considers how a lack of diversity of perspective means a government can miss important issues. Whilst politicians have responsibility for education policy, including the state school system, it seems they have limited experience of the systems themselves. Whilst the piece also comments positively on the government's focus on improving vocational qualifications, it remains concerned that the cabinet is far removed from this part of the education system. The piece concludes with the view that any child born today in the UK should have a fair shot at becoming a cabinet minister, but also holds the view that the latest reshuffle suggests that we are still some distance away from achieving this. The Times list of top-ranking universities has been published today, with many media outlets reporting that neither of the UK's most prestigious universities, Oxford and Cambridge, are at the top. The top spot has instead gone to the University of St Andrews, Scotland's oldest university. Oxford and Cambridge are ranked second and third on the list respectively, but lag behind St Andrews in key areas such as student satisfaction and degree completion rates. Full details of the list can be found on the Times Good University Guide. And finally, as government announces changes to travel rules, many press outlets are featuring details of the school holidays for this academic year. With many families keen to have a break after a long period of disruption and restrictions due to the pandemic, parents and carers are being advised to check holiday dates closely if they're considering a break in the autumn and winter, or if they are looking ahead to next summer. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio Weekend News.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.creativeresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful...
items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Whoo, and we're back. Do you know what the best feature of this new Podbean app is? That I can mute my mic. That is phenomenal. I don't know it's taken them this long to realize that that is a worthwhile feature to have on a recording platform. Because I don't know if you guys remember the early shows when you'd play the news and then I'd be typing, it's all you hear with ta-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I got told it was very, very loud. But yes, now they've muted my mic, I can ta-da-da-da all the way while the news is going on. But yeah, so that I'm going to have a look at that Queen of Katwe, not to be confused with Queen of Kate film, because I've had two strong recommendations from two very reputable people. So I'm going to trust your review and have a look at it. Maybe even this evening. Maybe even this evening. Right. So, is that the Fresh Prince? Does it sound like Fresh Prince? Hold on, let me just check one more time. Does that look like Fresh Prince? I've watched a lot of Fresh Prince in my time, and do you know what, Tom? I can hear it. I get what you mean. I know you didn't mean, nah, this is a story all about her. I know you didn't mean that. But as you were saying it, I can hear it, because it's when they do that kind of slow pan transition between something happening in the kitchen and something happening there. Oh no, sorry, in between scenes. I agree. I need to watch some more Fresh Prince. Great show. Shout out to Fresh Prince. Anyways, we digress. Jules, could you please call in for me? I was going to say please again, but I refuse. George, can you call in and let's get into the second part of the show where I get to talk about a topic very close to my heart, and that's the role of the designated safeguarding lead and what a role it is. Let's see if Jules is connecting.
Hello.
Hello, Jules. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm very well. As I'm glad you. I get the impression you've been in the studio the whole show, so hopefully you've had a, you've warmed up to the vibe.
Certainly. No, that was a good discussion to listen to, actually, on the inclusion agenda. I enjoyed that conversation earlier. And we've got sun in Yorkshire today.
What? No way.
It's a sunny day in Yorkshire. Wow. Yeah, we've got all your sunshine.
Well, by the looks, yeah, because I can't. There's not a ray of sunshine in sight where I'm looking at. It's grey as anything outside my window at the moment. But yeah, thank you for joining. Just like I did with Miss Mika, can you give our listeners just a quick intro about kind of your connection with education, what role you're on, and everything else, and just a little bio of yourself, please?
Certainly. Yeah, I'm based in Bradford in West Yorkshire. I'm vice principal at a very large all-through academy. We've got about 1,800 students on roll, including a sixth form. I'm a science teacher by trade. I've done a bit of maths. I've done data and exams. And now I've got the fantastic role of being the designated safeguarding lead. I'm in charge of special needs as well at my school. So it's a big operation. Absolutely love the job. Teaching is the best job in the world.
I agree. It is the best job in the world. I 100% agree with you. And this safeguard. How long have you been the DSL for at your school?
Well, I'm relatively new. This is my third year. So I've just started year three as DSL. So I've done it for two full years, including, of course, last year with the pandemic, which challenged absolutely everybody beyond belief. Still new to it, but I certainly learnt very quickly.
We're in pretty much the exact same. Well, when you're going to realize we're in the same position, but also not. So I'm in my third year as well, funnily enough. So I've been DSL. This is the third year at my school. The difference for me, though, is my school is a brand new school. So I was DSL of the in its first year when we had only year sevens. And obviously I've continued that to now being DSL of a school with 3 year groups. And we're going to grow up till we've got year 7 through to year 13. Yeah. And it's interesting to speak to someone. So did you to someone who started as a DSL in a completely full school, because when I started as year 7, wow, that was a shock to the system, let alone, I can't even imagine starting as a DSL in a completely full school.
I started in that first month of September, and I thought to myself, right, I'm going to write down what happens every day. And by the end of the first week, I'd filled three full sheets of A4 paper with different issues, all anonymised names, of course. It was like being hit in the face with a sledgehammer. It truly was. And then you have to regroup and think, right, how are we going to manage this? Because the workload does vary. September, obviously, towards the end of the month, can be quite busy. As learners start to come back and gain confidence, and they might start to tell you about what their summers have been like at home. And it certainly ebbs and flows. And then other matters might take place contextually in your surroundings that determine an issue that's going to crop up. So you've really got to prioritise what needs to be done when, and keep a weather eye on all the issues that are coming in, particularly from your pastoral team and the behaviour team, and think, right, do we need to respond to this? So it's a very didactic role, I'd say.
Yeah, no, definitely. And for someone, we may have some listeners listening. That sounds awful. Most people listening who may not be teachers. DSL is a designated safeguarding lead. It's a kind of the person that oversees all things safeguarding in the school. And as you will well know, safeguarding is like the number one priority in every single school. If your school is not a good safeguarding culture, your school is not a school, in my opinion. But yeah, the role itself, I don't know what you found. Do you have like a big safeguarding team, or what's the setup in your school at the moment when it comes to safeguarding?
Well, our whole culture is about it. It does happen here. That's what we're not. It does happen here. And I am very fortunate in that I've got a very large and diverse team in which we've got safeguarding leads, we've got deputies, we've got an attendance team who's got a designated safeguarding lead on it. We've got a very experienced pastoral team who are led by a lead behaviour director. And then we've also got alternative provision at our school. And everybody is gendered up on the safeguarding agenda. And obviously, me being the senior designated safeguarding lead, I'm in charge of ensuring that all those needs of the children are met. So we've got a very strong and large team at our school, which I'm very fortunate to work with. I couldn't do it without them.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. It's one of those roles where it's not a one, like we all know that obviously safeguarding is everyone's responsibility. We know that. But at the same time, it does, in terms of accountability, it's one of those roles where like, I can't even describe. It's when you spoke about it kind of ebbing and flowing, there comes certain times when it's, when so many different things have happened that are all kind of equally as serious. And
yeah,
the one thing about our role that I think maybe doesn't exist so much to other people. Do you know if you're, I don't know, let's say you've got a different role, maybe you don't get something done because, I don't know, maybe time ran away with you, therefore you couldn't get a certain task done or a certain email didn't get sent. That what the worst thing that could happen potentially in that situation, nothing drastic, I don't imagine. If you didn't get to send an email to do with lessons or curriculum, not the worst thing in the world in terms of the grand scheme. In our role sometimes, if you don't, I don't know if you get hit with that kind of, in the back of your mind, do you know if you didn't respond to, I don't know, maybe a social worker emailed and you never replied when you should have replied, you meant to reply but didn't get back to them. Like that can have, just not keeping that communication up could potentially have ramifications for that young person that could be, again, that, do you know what I mean? That could be long lasting or serious. And that kind of, I don't want to call it pressure because I don't think pressure is the right word, but that responsibility, I think, is a better word. Especially when you're manning a big team as well. It's difficult, isn't it?
And that's where you need to be really clever on how you work. So, for example, in our school, we have a safeguarding email, which all social workers communicate in that way. And there's somebody monitoring that all during the day to make sure that nothing's missed. There's no missed phone call because it's all in there and it's checked. And it's done every hour by somebody on the team. But you're right. I don't think anybody really spots some of these issues. One issue may take 5 or 6 hours to get anywhere. And there isn't another job like that in school. And many, many times you have to call upon colleagues to cover your lesson at the last minute. I can't come on duty now because I've got to take a phone call. There has to be an understanding that safeguarding is that priority of school, and that has to come first and foremost for the young people in our care.
No, definitely. When you said getting cover for lessons at the last minute, that really resonated with me. The amount of times I've had to send a quick message on the radio like 3 minutes before my lesson's about to start, saying, guys, please, could someone just sit in my class because I need to sort this out.
I'm still on the phone. I'll send an email out. I've got an email address set up for everybody who works with me, and I'm on a call. It's going to be at least an hour, and then I'll update it if I'm still there, because these things don't run to time with social services. They're obviously in the moment, and school time and their time doesn't always come together very well, does it?
No, I agree. Yeah, social work. Did you get in? I got inundated as soon as September the something hit. It was like all the social workers had their emails on delayed delivery, and they just came pinging in as soon as school opened, because obviously they knew we were on holiday. But they thought, right, you're back now. Ping, 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 ping. Let us know what's going on. Meeting, 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 meeting.
Yeah.
And I was at home. It was just crazy.
Your calendar looks good until Monday afternoon. And then the weeks are right off, isn't it? Because you're just absolutely full of work to do. And that's how it is. It's unpredictable and unmanageable at the same time. So you have to have those systems in place where one, record keeping is always going to be king, and that you have clear lines of communication around your expectations of the team. And if you need to do something, that will take priority always.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I currently don't work in a, like I said, my school is relatively small compared to yours. So the team, obviously everyone, I'm going to keep reiterating, it's everyone's responsibility, but the team itself is only me, and I've got two deputy DSLs who also have they have other responsibilities, like whole school responsibilities. And then we have like a head of year who's had a bit of training. So really at the moment for me, a lot of it is dealt with by me. And I think I've been lucky that they took away my kind of, I was a head of year for two years.
Great stomping ground for this job, isn't it? Head of year, pastoral background, massively. You've got huge skills you can just bring straight in.
Definitely. Yeah. But they took the head of year stuff away from me because they realized that as the school grows, the time commitments and everything else of DSLs means that often, I know you said you're Senko as well.
I am a qualified Senko, but I've got two Senkos who work for me. I will do anybody who's children in care, and then and having that Senko as well is really helpful. Because you're looking at it from two different ways, aren't you? Reducing risk and actually individual needs to help them access their learning. So it's not a prerequisite for DSL, but it's a very useful thing to have.
No, definitely, definitely. Right. I want to do, because maybe one day there'll be some people who have just started out as being a designated safeguard lead in school. And maybe they've had someone say, oh, do you know what? You should go on to Teachers Talk Radio and see if there's anything on Teachers Talk Radio about being a designated safeguard lead. Because what I think we should do is think about the tips and advice, like you did on Twitter, tips and advice for someone who's just starting out about what they should kind of do or get in place or how they should manage their time, etc., so that they could, anyone could listen back to this show in a few years' time or whatever else and be like, right, I've just started out. Ah, let me go listen to the show and get some insight. And if anyone in the room happens to either be a DSL or connected to a DSL or knows about the safeguarding world or anything else, if you have any tips or advice, please do share it in the chat, because I want to just make this a worthwhile resource as well for anyone that's new to the role. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Jules. Mm-hmm. What would you say, if we go through some tips, what would you say is either, doesn't need to be in priority order, but what are the tips you give?
So your first port of call is Working Together to Safeguard Children 2018 from the DfE, and then Keeping Children Safe in Education, which has just been republished in 2021. They're both quite beefy documents, but it unpicks for you what the role actually is. Then it's go to the policy. What's your policy in school? If this happens, what are you going to do about it? And safeguarding is such a large area, you can't possibly know all the aspects of the job and be an expert in it either. So you need to join on some training. Your local authority, wherever that is, will run that training. And it's a two-day course. And that for me, I did mine in October. So I've been in post about 5 weeks. And by the time I got there in October, things had started to make sense. So between those documents, your policy and the local authority, that gives you a really good grounding as to what the workload is going to be and how do you respond when a child makes a disclosure or other information comes forward. So those would be my first things. When you're on that DSL training with the local authority, you'll meet DSLs in your local area, swap email addresses, get their phone numbers, join Twitter forums like the Edgy Twitter and indeed how you found me to start with. And you can find that there are people out there you can run things by anonymously and share experiences, and that's a very invaluable use of information too.
Definitely. I think one of those, I'm just going to get to Leon, I've just seen your comment, give me a sec. But when you, and Jules, if you have a read of Leon's comment in the chat as well. So, but in response to what you were saying, again, I feel like I'm fortunate. I'm in an academy, quite a big multi-academy trust. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate enough to have a network, of course, of DSLs across the schools. And we don't meet up, but we have like virtual meetings and they are useful. But I don't know how, if I weren't in an academy and I was maybe just in a kind of maintained school as DSL without the network of support, I don't know what I would have done, if I'm honest. I don't know how I would have coped in that situation. When I came into the role, straight away I was thrust into a community of safeguarding leads, and I didn't feel as lost. But I genuinely think if I didn't have people,
if you're
to
one
bounce
lonely
off,
voice in the dark, it's a tough gig, isn't it?
Genuinely, because I had the training, so you go on the safeguarding training, but that doesn't really, like, when you get into the thick of the role, I don't feel like I've not been trained specifically for this role. I've been trained for safeguarding and learn about the kind of the legal aspects, everything else, trained on that. And I understand all that. But in terms of like the day to day, what the role entails, of course, you can go to the legislation and the guidance, and everything else. But I still don't feel like I've been trained personally. Maybe I don't know if you feel the same way, Jules, but I don't feel like.
I'm not sure that there is a training vehicle that would prepare you for doing this, to be fair, apart from doing it. Does that make sense?
Literally
going through that thought process, talking to colleagues. I mean, if you're a DSL in your own school, obviously you've got your senior leadership team as well, who will have experience of sometimes situations crop up that no one's ever dealt with before. And you're literally having to think on your feet and think, right, what are we going to do about this? And the first rule is the child safe? And if it isn't, then you're ringing it into social services.
Of course,
And then there's all the side issues about where do I broker support. But if we took the previous conversation that you were having this afternoon about the LGBTQ agenda, what do you do with a young person who's on the transgender journey? That's something we've come across in our school recently, and we've found some really good support in our locality, and they specialise in these things. The forced marriage agenda, you might get somebody, a charity like Karma Nirvana, involved, and they will come in and work alongside you on something that might not be something you've personally experienced before or have any knowledge of. And you have to be alive to that, don't you?
Yeah, that is the thing. I think you come across, and I'm just going to go to Leon's comment in a moment, but you can come across stuff that you've never, in your own kind of personal life, never, ever, ever come across. You've read about it on legislation, or you've read about it in the guidance or the government kind of publications, and you've never come across it in your own personal life. And then next thing you know, next month, it's happening in your school. You are the person as a DSL who needs to oversee how we now safeguard these people. And it's the pressure. Yeah. Again, I'm going to use the word pressure because I feel like I do feel the pressure sometimes, just because if you don't do something correctly, no, not correctly, but if something goes wrong, worst case scenario, something goes wrong, I can't even imagine how I'd feel if I dropped the ball on something along the way. And now the students, you know what I mean? And that pressure is something that I don't know if anyone else feels that in a role in school. Let me know if you think it does exist in school, but I'm willing to put a limit and say, you know what? I don't think that pressure exists in another role in school, to think that if I drop the ball on this, the kid could literally come to harm's way. And I'm not going to be blamed.
That's tough. It's tough.
It's tough. Very tough. So Leon asked a question. So Leon asked, he said, in terms of best practice and dissemination of knowledge and experience, is there a DSL portal or database or journal that you have or use for access to a national picture of safeguarding practice? He's asking because his PhD is on state responses to extremism. And obviously schools are on the front line through Prevent, etc. So he's asking, is there a DSL portal, database or journal that we access for national picture of safeguarding practice?
There's a number of forums that you can consult. I don't know whether you allow people to name drop people on this show or not. Okay. So I'm a member of the Safeguarded Network for school. That is a national organisation. It costs £100 a term. And they have expertise in many areas, and they actually put together a training model if you want to use it. If you buy in a package such as CPOMS, if you use that, a recording system, they also have people who work for them on consultancy basis where you can ask questions. There's Safeguarding Natters, which is another Twitter organisation, which Sarah Stokes often speaks on. You'll see that I follow her on Twitter. She's another DSL that talks nationally on that forum. And then there are other things like Alan McKenzie's Safeguarding Network briefings. That's all about e-safety. And Andrew Hall's Safeguarding briefing is also very useful. They actually are free, and you can sign up for that, and they will send out a monthly what you should be doing now and top tips and links to other organisations that might help you actually deliver the safeguarding message across school. So that's a handful of suggestions there as to where you might go for information other than your local authority. And there are more. But those are the ones that I particularly use and find very helpful.
No, I agree. So those are a few, Leon. I don't know. When I read your message, I was thinking if they're like a go-to, I got the impression that he's asking basically, is there a go-to thing on the net or something where you can just get loads and loads? Go on.
If you were going to give special needs, you'd talk about NASEN, the National Association of Special Educational Needs. That platform doesn't really exist for DSL. There are pockets of excellence, and then you hear about these things from other people and then join it so that you are also getting that information and filtering what's important to your school. Because we're all working in different areas of the country. The context in which you're working will change, and what you're dealing with. So we're in inner city Bradford. What we're dealing with there, you'll be dealing with something very different in Dorset, I'm sure. Are you still there?
I am. Give me a second.
Okay.
No, can you hear me? I'm probably a bit far away at the moment. Yeah, no, because I had to. This is live radio, so my little boy has just woken up, and he's next door, and I could hear him crying. So I had to just make sure he's like,
we'll allow that.
Indeed, you know, it's like John. You had the virtual when you got all the virtual calls, and you have the and you have to like go away from the mic for like real life reasons. Like the little one comes on the camera. It's all that. This is live radio. It does happen. But yeah, so I think that's great. And then also, I'm looking at the kind of tips you had on social media. We're actually going to get to those tips in a moment. But what I need to do, because Tom Rogers, I believe, is, I don't know if he's still in the call, but we need to hear from our sponsors. We need to pay the bills. So I need to go. I need to go to a couple adverts. Otherwise, I get fired. That's a lie, by the way. I don't get fired, Tom. I don't get fired. But I need to go to the adverts. On the other side of that, we're going to get back in some tips. Again, for some new, if there's a new DSL or someone new to roll. But for now, we'll go to some adverts. So what I'll do, I'll put you on mute and then we'll go to the adverts.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE validated programs to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful, and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club. Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE validated programs to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics.
Right. Someone just said no sound in the chat. So I'm assuming, well, hoping that you could hear the advert. Let me bring Jules back. Hold on. Jules, you back? You there?
I am. I'm still here.
Hello. Perfect. Hello. Could you hear the adverts, right?
I could, yes. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Cool. So I don't know. So, this is a name that I don't know where the surname is, but MUK. Hopefully you can sort your sound out. My advice, if you can't hear anything, check the volume on your own phone, because I think everything's all right on our end. So check the volume on your own phone. But anyway, so those are adverts. So let's get back into these tips and advice and everything else. So we've already spoken about, well, the first tip on essentially the policy side of things, because it does start there. And I think I had a recent case that came up. It was my first, I'm not going to go into any detail essentially, but I had a case that came up recently that was the first of quite a serious that I had to deal with in my kind of 3 years, well, 2 and a bit years. And the first place I went, because it was one of those things that I'd read about, but never had to actually deal with it firsthand, I just went straight back to the guidance and had a look at what they were advising and the kind of, do you know, the flow charts of who to contact and blah, blah, blah. So I went through one of those, and it was useful, which means that the guidance is doing its job. But that's the first place to start. So any DSL, never forget. I think it's one of those things, and when you do the training at the start of the year and you get staff to refamiliarize themselves with the policies and the guidance and legislation, never just, when you get into the role, it's easy to kind of forget that that's there and just get immersed in the here and now and forget that there's people have written documents and publications about what to do in these situations. So if you are a new DSL, do not forget or just get immersed too much in the kind of the immediate issue and forget that there's so much guidance out there for people who have dealt with this beforehand and they've written publications and everything else. So I think that's a great first tip. What would your next kind of tip or advice be for a new DSL?
I mentioned about enrolling on the local authority training, which goes hand in hand with that first tip. I think also you've got a resource in the local police. We have a Safe for Schools police officer who works at our school who's invaluable in terms of support from the police aspect of things if you need it. And that you really should link in with whatever your local arrangement is with that, because not every school will have a Safe for Schools police officer, but the police obviously are dealing with the end product of some of the safeguarding things that go wrong, and they really do want to help you with the preventative work as well, and they will happily come into school and assist you.
That's the thing. Do you know what? So I've got I'm glad you mentioned preventative, because in an ideal world, obviously it's not that simple, in an ideal world we would be able to create or feed into some sort of pastoral curriculum or some sort of curriculum.
Definitely that, the PHSE that, curriculum, yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That, and it needs to be tailored in a way, well, that educates kids in that kind of aspect of their life to prevent to hopefully try and prevent more serious things from happening down the line. And I think that's quite a crucial part. A lot of safeguarding is reactive because things can crop up, but you also want to make sure that we're delivering kids information from when they first join our school that educates them about, of course, the rights and wrongs, but also just things that are more serious so that they can learn what to do and blah, 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 and how to respond and hopefully never get caught up, fingers crossed, in anything like that in the first place. That's also a part of the role for sure.
It is. And if you take Ofsted's review of sexual harm and sexual harassment from April last year, one of the key findings from the young people they talked to was that they felt that the RSE curriculum and the PHSE curriculum had been no help at all in helping them navigate these things, and had either gone to their peers or to social media to find out. So that in itself tells you how important that PHSE curriculum, that educating the whole child, those themes regularly coming through assemblies, in pastoral conversations about keeping yourself safe, looking after each other, kindness. These things are all vital, aren't they? And that is also a key indicator of your school culture if those conversations are happening freely between young people and your staff.
No, definitely. I think I think it was Tom actually. Tom's in the chat still. I think I saw a tweet of his where it was like an image where it had someone had graffitied something like "Protect your daughters," but then what they'd done is actually drawn a red line through "Protect your daughters," and underneath had written "Educate your sons" as a kind of message to, as you can imagine, the way to solve the kind of if there's a sexual harassment. The issue of sexual harassment in schools between young people is through education early, and you need to
early, more early than secondary school, in fact.
And if we go in that situation where maybe it hadn't been dealt with in early years for whatever reason, definitely we need to make sure we're tackling it head on. I think I feel like maybe a lot of schools don't want to, but I feel like maybe they do not want to, I'm not sure, but tackling it, because it's such a sensitive topic, but without tackling it head on, people just end up being influenced by the worst things that they see on the net, or they get influenced by bigotry, or they get influenced by incel culture, or they get influenced by so many things that are just out there on the net, rather than being taught and educated to be able to discuss it in a safe environment with an adult that they trust and blah, 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 rather than just going, I wonder what I could find out about this and Googling it, rather than us as schools saying, do you know what? This is a safe place for kids. And if we're not going to teach them, who's going to teach them? Obviously, they've got parents or us. That's it. It's parents or us.
We've got one chance with us. One chance, and we need to make it matter. We really do.
Yeah, and the Sobeys just said parental engagement as well. Definitely. Let me not elevate teachers to a position where we're like at the same stand of parents. But we know there are parents out there that will not provide that kind of education for their children. So if they don't do it, then we definitely have to. And if they do it, we've got a responsibility to supplement that. And when it comes to kind of sexual harassment in particular, because we know that it's come to the fore recently. It's always been around, but come to the fore recently. They've shone even a bigger light on it in all the legislation and everything else that schools yes. need to look back at their PSHE curriculum or whatever kind of delivery that they give kids and check whether they are actually addressing it head on or is it a little side note or are we actually delving into it. So boys know what is and isn't acceptable. Girls know what isn't and isn't is or isn't acceptable rather than, just getting fake information or kind of social media information. It's never going to be, that's not the way to tackle these issues, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you. And I think every school needs to have that at the forefront of their mind. Gone are the days when safeguarding leads could be doing other jobs and not this full time. And really these issues, it is your responsibility to make sure that's covered in your school. You can't expect other people to do it by proxy.
No, definitely. That's something for me. That's in my actual role this year. Because like I said, I've been given this role. I've focused now on this role. I still teach maths, but now this is my focus. Last year, I was head of year at the same time. So I had two different roles that were kind of sometimes got in the way of each other. Not in a bad way, but you can understand how in a head of year, you can have something that's very immediate. You can also have something that's very immediate going on in a safeguarding world. And it can become quite tricky. But this year, definitely something that I want to definitely delve into, make sure is that the content we're giving students in this PSHE curriculum in tutor times or whatever else is rich, academically rich, but also tackling, going to the heart of issues that we know will and could and will affect these people as they go through their lives. Just make them proper, upstanding members of the community, definitely. So then I've got your tweets here. And I think you've said something great here I think it was number 7. And you said, and this is something that I've learned as I've grown with the role, but you said, never think you're on your own. Reach out for advice and don't work in isolation. If you're designated safeguarding lead, I always felt when I first started that it was me. It was only kind of me. I was only lead. I had the deputies. Yes. But they had other roles. So it's still kind of on my shoulders. And I often did take a lot of the weight of everything on me rather than doing a lot of delegation. And I definitely didn't do I didn't do enough kind of outsourcing and speaking to other people elsewhere. But I think that's a vital part of the role
It's twofold, isn't it? One, checking that your gut instinct is right. And secondly, it's the impact on your mental health of carrying that all around with you yourself. And one thing that I'm very fortunate that we're offered professional supervision at our school. And that is a big feature of keeping children safe, that all designated safeguarding leads should have access to supervision. And some of the trickiest cases that I've dealt with in the last 2 years, I've actually gone with the case and discussed it and potential routes and looked at the positives and negatives if you do this and do that in supervision sessions. And that really has helped me move forward massively in my role.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned supervision. So I wanted to talk about it because I've been, again, my academy, we have DSL supervisions as well. We had them last year. And if you are listening, maybe listening in the future, and you are a DSL new, these are something that you want to get make sure your school does. And just to kind of translate for anyone that's wondering what it is. So for me, mine was virtual, of course, because it was very recently, but it was only about 3 or 4 in our case DSLs, and with one kind of professionally trained counselor style person for us. And there wasn't really like an agenda per se. It was just a space where we could speak just fairly candidly about what's going on. We can speak candidly about what the roles entail and what we're dealing with at the moment, being able to vent, because like you said, Jules, I go through the day knowing so much about students that not many people else in the school, like only a handful of people know.
That's right. And that's how it should be, a handful of people.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. But carrying that around can be a burden. I try to compartmentalize everything, but even me, the most stoic person in the world, can often admit that it can get to me when you know so much and you know what they're going through. You see them just flourishing in school, but you know about what they're going through at home and blah, 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 blah. Having a space to talk to people who are going through something similar was really kind of therapeutic, really cathartic, really, really positive for me in my role. And by the sounds of it, it was useful for you as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely is.
Yeah.
And the diverseness of what you deal with is just astonishing. And some weeks it could come thick and fast. And we never use the Q word in our, we've got a shared office and we don't use the quiet word because that's just asking for trouble. The Q word, yeah. It's referred to. Yes.
Well, when not much is, when everything seems to be a little bit in a lull phase for now, not many meet, and then next week, all it takes is a phone call from the police to say that something's happened, and then you're back in the thick of it, I guess, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
I love the role. I just think
it really matters. It really, yeah. really matters. Teaching matters, but this is just like the bottom rung of Maslow, isn't it? That we're dealing with here, making sure that children are safe.
Yeah, and let me say to you, if you work in a school at the moment, look out for your DSLs. Check in. Honestly, it's going to sound strange.
Smile but at them.
checking in with them, like what the best thing that happened once in my current school, one of my colleagues. He's a deputy designated safeguarding lead actually. And on one day, he just kind of called me into his office and just was basically just asking how I am, because he was reading a lot of the different concerns and knew what was going on and knew that one of the cases I was dealing with, everything else. And he was just like, he was just basically did a check-in session with me. And it was just really, really nice. Like I hate the word nice as an adjective. I can't think of a better word at the moment, but if you're close with a colleague and they're the DSL, check in with them, because I guarantee they're carrying around a lot of information that can sometimes be a big weight on the shoulder. And just give them a let them vent a little bit sometimes, because we're allowed to, we need the space to do so. We need the space to do so as well, because not everyone that we work with runs at the same level of efficiency as we would like sometimes, as I know everyone can relate. But when you've got a kid's safety at hand, or their kind of well-being at hand, things become a lot more pressurized in that environment, definitely. Oh, man, I could talk about DSLs all day, but what we're going to have to do, Jules, unfortunately, yeah. is based on time, we're going to have to end it there.
I've really enjoyed being able to talk about it, and I'm really proud of what we do on behalf of the children. It's a privilege and it's an honour, isn't it, to actually do this for other people. It's the ultimate service.
Definitely. Mm. And even like, there's always one case I think about. I don't know why, every now and again I'm like, so this, for this young person, their life changed drastically. I'm not going to go into any detail, but put it this way, their life changed drastically for the better because of circumstances. And I and the rest of the team had pretty much a major part in that transformation. And it's crazy to think that just little old me, like, who am I? I'm just some random, like, just a little old guy has had like a kind of actual impact on a young person's life, to the point where their life is now transformed. Not even just like you've learned more in school, but your actual familial circumstances have transformed for the better as a result of something that I've done or our team has done. That actually blows my mind that we can have this impact on a lasting impact on a young person's life. It's crazy. Crazy. I could talk about this all day. But Jules, listen, thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
For joining. And hopefully, listen, I'll do some more DSL stuff in the future, because I want to get some more DSLs on. Raise the profile of the safeguard, even more so on digital radio for safeguarding leads. We need to talk more. We need to definitely have, the more DSLs talk to each other, the better we all are for it. So yeah. Thank you very much, Jules.
Okay. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Ooh, mate, I feel like I'm getting emotional. I feel like I was getting emotional there. It's one of those roles, man. It's one of those roles that you spend a lot of time not being emotional. Because when you speak to kids about what they're going through, you deliberately have to stay not emotionless, but you don't react kind of emotionally. So it's nice every now and again when you get to speak about it. Yeah, hits home. I'm not an emotional guy, but hit home. I'm not going to start like having tears drip on my keyboard and stuff. But at the same time, it's just great to speak to someone. Yeah, very therapeutic. Anyways, that brings us to the end of... Yeah, I've enjoyed this show. It's been less jokes, less frills, but it's been good nonetheless. Been great nonetheless. But thank you, everyone, for listening in and tuning in. What's this? Yeah, Leon saying he taught in a prison for 3 years and every day's a safeguarding day. Trust me. Only we didn't get any training and it can get really heavy. I can empathize massively with that. Get really, really heavy. Leon, you've got some fans in the comments. Leon, you might as well post your... I mean, Leon, I've got you on Twitter. Let me just do a cheeky plug. I think it is the name you've put on in here anyway. Oh, no, it's not actually. It's at Secure Lee. I've got your little plug there, Leon. At Secure Lee, but secure is without the E at the end. So, yeah, you'll find him. Either way, thank you very much for listening. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so either via the Teachers Talk Radio Twitter, which is at TTRadio 2021, or you can get at me directly from Twitter, which is at Khalil_R91. And thank you very much, everyone, for kind of listening, tuning in, participating, and everything else.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.
I've got nothing entertaining to say. I know you're waiting for it. I've run out of jokes. It's not that kind of show. Catch you guys in a bit. See you guys next week. Oh, am I on next week? Let me just check my calendar. I don't even know if I've even told Tom whether I'm on next week. I feel like I've got a social occasion. I know I'm talking like I'm still on the mic. I'm still on the mic, going to talk about it. I'm not on next week, unfortunately. Wedding season is still going on. So I'm not on next week. But I'll let you guys know on Twitter when I am back on. But you'll have a week without me next week. Do not miss me too much. Adios.